Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we have more practical advice from our physical therapists on the show today. Lori Tyne Brody, one of them, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, welcome back.
Good to be here.
And also Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison. And Jill, good to see you as well.
Good morning, Larry, and everybody else.
Today on the show, we're talking about bone density and the importance of exercise in treating and preventing osteoporosis. We'll also take your questions. You have questions about the health of your bones, you need some advice about low bone mass and finding the right exercises, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And let's just start with the basics and just talk about first, what is osteoporosis? And Jill, do you want to chime in?
Absolutely. So by definition, osteoporosis is when your bone mineral density assessment, which you have when you have a DEXA scan, your physician may order that, is 2.5 standard deviations below kind of your age-matched norms. If you have osteopenia, you are 1 to 2.5 standard deviations below those age match norms. And it's interesting when we look at people who sustain a fracture, a low trauma fragility fracture, that more people have a diagnosis of osteopenia than osteoporosis. So they have a mild loss of bone mineral density versus a severe loss of bone mineral density.
So why does it happen?
So that's a great question. So one of the things that we know now is the optimal time to fill your bone bank and really acquire your peak bone mass is during adolescence. So between the ages of approximately 12 to 25 is when people really build their bone bank. And this is a relatively new discovery. And so there are many of us, my generation, Lori's generation, who didn't optimally fill their bone bank, they didn't load their bone appropriately through exercise, or didn't eat the proper diet to acquire peak bone mass, then as we age, particularly in women, once we hit menopause, our bone mineral density continues to drop. So we start doing withdrawals from our bone bank. And the problem is if you didn't fill it maximally during that peak time, you're withdrawing from a not full bone bank, if you will. So then people run into osteopenia and osteoporosis.
And it's more common among women than men?
Yes, for sure. And that has to do with particularly postmenopausal women as compared to men. So until women hit menopause, men and women are somewhat similar. But then once after we hit menopause, we see a rapid decrease in our bone mineral density due to the lack of estrogen.
All right, well, let's talk about the role of exercise in preventing and treating these low bone masses. Lori, do you want to chime in? Or?
Sure. One of the most common prescriptions for postmenopausal women typically is they will be told to go out and walk. Just go out and walk every day, and that's going to be sufficient. And what we know now from, you know, newer research is that that is not sufficient. So loading that is the same, repetitive, like walking is classic, or even running, which is, you know, marginally better because you have more impact. They're cyclical and they're repetitive and they're loading your bones in the same way over and over again. What we're learning now is that the loading has to be novel, that it can't be the same thing over and over. So that means moving in what we call odd directions, which brings things like dancing to the forefront of interventions. So there's a great deal of information out there, which, you know, we can't summarize briefly, but certainly we can answer questions on the frequency, the intensity, the duration, how often do you need to rest, how long do you need to load, and so on. So exercise is really key in this, and just know that walking is not the only answer.
Yeah.
Right.
Jill, do you want to chime in?
Sure. And walking is really good from a cardiovascular perspective, all those other things, but we know that it doesn't improve bone mineral density. That is one of the systems it is not impactful for, and that was an intended pun. What we do know about increasing bone mineral density, as Lori said, is it needs to be new and novel, so you need to mix it up. You actually do better if you do intervals. So you load for 30 seconds and then your body takes a break. And then you do a different movement that's high impact for 30 seconds. If you do it continuously, like Lori said, the bones adapt to it and say, oh, I'm getting used to this, and they stop laying down new bone. So the interval type of workouts that are becoming fairly popular in health clubs, where you do an activity, pause, do something non-impact, do an activity, pause, do something that's non-impact, are actually really well designed to increase bone mineral density or help with your bone mineral density. But the problem is, before you do this type of impact loading, jumping, et cetera, you have to have adequate strength and adequate balance. So if you're in that category where you need to work on your strength and your balance, you may need to do that prior to doing specific osteogenic type of exercises. So you can't just immediately go out and start some of these exercises. You may need to do some other exercises to get you prepared to do it.
As someone with a soon-to-be 18-year-old daughter, I'm thinking about, as a parent or maybe even a grandparent with children to think about, seems to me the really critical time, you know, that early time period up to what, 25, did you say, or something like that?
Roughly, yes.
Yeah.
Encouraging them.
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, your daughter plays volleyball. Great activity.
Right.
Lots of novel movements, some jumping, moving in all different directions, squatting, hitting a ball with the upper extremity. So you involve the upper extremity. It's a great activity for that novel exercise. But you also need to be but from a nutritional perspective, you need to be filling your bone bank by eating well. So one of the things of, you know, Jill and my generation is, you know, our mom made us drink milk at every meal. We drank milk all the time. And you know, kids nowadays, maybe not as much. So looking at the diet piece is also important.
And the other thing, the volleyball that we talked about, things like that, that odd impact is fantastic. But one of the things that one of our team physicians, Tammy Sharpella, and I looked at was incorporating some of these things into junior high physical education classes, because as we know, not everybody has an opportunity for extracurricular activities. And we want to make sure that bone health is equal opportunity across all socioeconomic statuses. So there's more and more interest of incorporating some of these activities and movements, because we know it doesn't take a lot, you know, short duration, a few sets, et cetera, into junior high physical education classes to make sure that every child, every individual has the opportunity to be exposed to these type of movements.
And then going to the other end of the age spectrum, let's say we've got a woman who is 60 years old and didn't have an opportunity to do a lot of those exercises and so forth, and now may face some issues. Is all hope lost there or what?
So that is such a great question. And one of the article that Lori and I had reviewed for this, one of the things I liked about it is it showed how people who may have osteoporosis can actually still get better. And that's where seeing a physical therapist and getting a really good resistance training program, a progressive resistance strength training program, so the muscles can be strong enough, and then incorporating a balance program, because we know balance is highly correlated with falls, as is osteoporosis. So getting an adequate balance program before you actually start some of these very osteogenic specific exercises is ideal. So this is a great role for physical therapy. It's really never too late. We can get things rolling regardless at what level the patient's bone status currently is.
Yeah, so it's going to essentially depend on that, on where the person's at. But adjustments can be made, and it's if you're 70 years old or 80 years old, you can still say, hey, I can start this right now.
Right. Absolutely.
They may not be able to reverse, what they've lost, but they can prevent further decline.
Yeah.
Right. And the other thing in that age generation, that age population, and our mother was one of those, many times they also will take a bisphosphonate, some sort of medication that helps lay down more bone. And that's wonderful. It's a good thing. But if you think about it, that's just taking that isn't going to help with balance, which will help prevent falls. And so adding exercise, balance training really kind of incorporates the whole thing. So even though you're taking a bisphosphonate, don't think that, oh, I'm doing that, that's fine. There's still a place for progressive resistive training and balance.
Absolutely. Lori Tyne, Brody, Jill Tyne, Nissenbaum, our guest today. We're starting by talking about osteoporosis and maybe dealing with it and the importance of exercise and maybe seeing your physical therapist. If you haven't, have some concerns about it, a good place to start would be right there with a physical therapist. Join in with your questions. If other questions as well, we're happy to take them at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@WPR.org. Producer today, Jane Rotunda. On-air producer, Natalie Guyette. I'm Larry Mueller. Christina Myshock, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Physical therapy on our minds today. Osteoporosis and exercise. Aches and pains you might have you want to deal with, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@WPR.org. Let's take a call. Arlene in New Berlin, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Arlene. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry, and good morning, ladies. The reason I called is I am an 81-year-old kind of active woman, and about a month ago, I had a problem with my dominant arm. It felt like I maybe injured my muscle, and come to find out, after talking to my arthritic doctor this last Friday, I may have a rotator cuff tear. The reason I'm calling is I would like to know if I should wear a sling until I see my orthopedic man, which is in 3 weeks.
I'm seeing some head shaking the wrong way. Jill,
right.
Comment?
Well, that's a great question, Arlene, and the answer is no, because one of the things we're concerned about with individuals of your age is a frozen shoulder. And so we need you to keep your arm moving very gently and frequently within a pain-free range. So to use, for example, a very lightweight broom and move your arms up and overhead and side to side to keep the fluid moving prior to seeing the orthopedic surgeon is a really wonderful idea. So we don't want you to use that sling. Lori?
So Arlene, did you do something to stir up this shoulder, or did you take a fall or something?
No, I have not fallen. I have not lifted 50-pound weights. And the only thing the doctor said to me is maybe I slept wrong on my shoulder. I don't know. I normally sleep on my left side, which is the best side to sleep on. Has to do with the heart. And I am continuing moving my arm. I have to brush my hair. I have to brush my teeth. I have to put my clothes on. I have to do dishes. And I'll tell you a thing you are not going to like. Last Friday, I scrubbed my floors on my hands and knees.
Oh, you sound just like our mother.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
You know what, Arlene? If this is not causing you a tremendous amount of pain in your shoulder, I would keep doing the things you need to do. So it sounds like you did not have an acute injury where you tore something. It sounds like some sort of an underlying inflammatory process, cause unknown at this point. But there's no reason you should stop using that shoulder within a comfort zone. You don't want to really irritate it so you're in a lot of pain, but you want to just keep using it like you are. That's absolutely the best thing, because a frozen shoulder will be far worse than anything you're feeling right now.
Yeah, right. There you go. There you go, Arlene. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Kim emailed.
Yeah, good one. Kim emailed to say she's been told she has cervical dizziness vertigo.
Can you talk about dizziness? How
cervicogenic dizziness? Yeah. Uh-huh.
She's wondering about how physical therapy might help.
Okay. So one of the things that a physical therapist, and we have a number of physical therapists here in the spine clinic at Research Park that specialize in cervical spine disorders. So there are a number of underlying causes for this kind of condition. So the very first step is doing a really thorough assessment, and they'll look at the cervical spine mechanically. They will also look at head position, posture, and they will look at head movements and things that cause vertigo in her head. They'll look at inner ear, they'll look at balance, they'll look at a whole number of factors and try to put together a picture of what exactly is causing her vertigo. So, or the dizziness, the cervicogenic dizziness, and then devise a treatment program based upon that. It's a little hard to say exactly what the intervention would be because it's not the same for everybody. So similarly, if someone comes in with knee pain or back pain, the intervention is going to be slightly different based upon what the physical therapist finds on their examination. So it would be really important to get in and see a physical therapist and get that assessment and then get started on a rehabilitation program. And it may include some manual therapy. It may include some specific exercises. We do a lot of work with targets, with lasers and targets. For people with cervicogenic issues, and then some home activities. So I would encourage Kim to get in and get that problem assessed.
Okay. Pat in Three Lakes has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have a question. I just tuned in kind of late probably, but I heard you say that walking doesn't help bone density. I don't know. I guess what I do is I do a lot of walking, 2 or 3 miles a day, 4 miles. I'm 80 years old. I also do weightlifting, curls, some presses, and I eat a very balanced diet, mostly fruits, vegetables, berries, and so forth and so on. I was wondering, in walking really makes me feel good, and I'm kind of it puzzles me that it doesn't help with bone density. Anyway, that's my question. Walking doesn't help with bone density?
Unfortunately, that is correct, because what happens is your bone gets used to the same load. So with walking, you're loading the bone the same way over and over and over. And the body adapts, the bone adapts to that very quickly. And so it kind of stops laying down more bone. So there is a little strategy you can use. And I think that's why Lori has her hand up. Is that your hand up? And I think she's going to chime in with the difference between just walking straight forward and some other things you can do while you're walking.
Well, that was one piece of it. But then also one of the things that we haven't really harped on was something that you just said, Jill, but might've been missed. And that is it will improve your bone density up to a certain level. So if you are not walking and you start walking, your bones will respond to that load. But once they get accustomed to that load, you will not then improve your bone density beyond that. So let's be clear, when you go from zero up to a walking program, you will increase your bone density from where you were at, or if you're initiating a walking program. But once your bones accommodate to that, you will not have a further increase. But as Jill said, you can increase more by adding what we call odd loads. And go ahead and explain those, Jill.
So, Pat, it sounds like you're pretty active and that you're a regular walker, which probably puts you in that category that you've maxed out how much bone mineral gains you're going to get from walking. So you're not a novice walker, you're experienced. So changing the speed a little bit, if that's okay from a balance perspective. So walking more briskly, then slowing down. Doing some sidestepping, doing some backwards walking, doing a little bit of hopping or hopping in place. And so you're constantly challenging the bone would be helpful. All of this would have to be done within the safety of your strength and your balance ability. So just keep that in mind. But that would, in essence, confuse your bone, and that's what you want to do. So it's like, surprise, I'm going to load my bone by moving this way. Or surprise, I'm going to walk backwards now. And that would be an unexpected movement for your bone, and that's what it needs.
And good luck, Pat. Sounds like you're on the right track.
Appreciate your call.
Hope we clarified that for you, because we don't want people walking away, oh, pardon the pun, thinking they shouldn't walk. So
right.
Walking is a really good activity, but once your body accommodates, you will not add additional bone beyond that. Yeah,
right, and
you stop walking.
And it's good for so many other systems. Yeah. It's good for cardiovascular health. It's good for mental health. There's many, many systems that it's very, very good for.
Yeah.
Good thing to do in the morning. Clears your brain, gets you ready, and puts you in the right mood. That's the way I look at it anyway.
Yep.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it. Ann in northern Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. My mother had very poor osteoporosis, and my sister and I came upon or were recommended some books by a doctor by the name of Miriam Nelson, and it taught us a lot about the hope regarding doing the exercises. And one of the things that I've learned is that the what I eat has also been helpful, because I've gone from osteoporosis down to osteopenia, and part of it is I looked on a list that the doctor had given me about collard greens, and it's loaded with calcium. So there's a lot of food products besides milk that are, and a lot of it is greens oriented. So I load up on collard greens and kale and all of that. But I'm also one of the lucky ones that gets to go to the Y and be a part of, even at the age of 70, part of those routines, those interval things you were talking about. And so I guess I'm just verifying everything that you're saying, and it's helped me, you know, so that I am now, I don't know if I'll ever get to that point, but at least I'm not osteoporosis. I'm osteopenia. So anyhow.
Good for you, Anne. Thank you for calling. Jill, a comment.
Yeah. So Larry, you asked the great question, can we reverse this? Here's someone who did. So she went from being osteoporosis to osteopenic. So her bone mineral density is on the upward spiral, if you will. She did activity modification. She found activities that work for her. And then her calcium intake. So she's right. Dark green leafy vegetables, which of course every teenager wants in their diet, are also full of calcium. So you're right. It's not just dairy products. So people who have some lactose sensitivities, there are other ways to get your calcium. And one of the things really quick about when you do consume your calcium, the whole drinking the milk, like having a glass of milk with every meal, is actually a really great strategy, because your body can only absorb, I think it's 500 milligrams of calcium at a time. So you can't engorge all your calcium in one meal and be done for the day. You have to sprinkle it out throughout the day. So that's where that saying, drink a glass of milk with every meal, is actually very beneficial.
All right. Ann, thanks again. Appreciate it. Rosemary in Oconomowoc, we'll go to you now. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi. I'm 84 years old. I'm diagnosed with spinal stenosis, and I've been to a therapist and an orthopedic doctor, and I do mostly stretching exercises. I'd like to know what else that they have to offer for me.
Okay, so Rosemary, that in terms of spinal stenosis, did they tell you if you have central canal stenosis or foraminal stenosis?
Or just know which one. I really don't, but I'm considering going to the Y, and I would like to know also what kind of exercises I should do if I go to the Y.
Perfect. You should get in the pool at the Y. So that would be my very best advice. So I asked about foraminal versus central canal stenosis. So foraminal stenosis is the stenosis where the nerve roots come out the sides of your spinal cord and go down one leg. You'll hear people talk about sciatica. I've got sciatica on the right or sciatica on the left. And that's where the nerve roots get pinched or impinged as they exit the main spinal cord. Central canal is when you have narrowing where your big spinal cord is. And that's you have to be more careful with your intervention then, because you're working in a much narrower range of tolerance. But regardless of that, there is a great deal of research supporting the unloading of your spine when you get in the water and use the water's buoyancy to unload the spine. So the buoyancy takes the pressure off of your spinal cord, and then the water's viscosity, that resistance you get to movement, works to strengthen you. So any body part that's underwater is going to get resistance to get strengthened as you move through the water. So simply walking forward, backward, sideways in the water is going to strengthen all those things underwater. Doing things like little squats to stand up and down in the water will help strengthen your legs and your hips. So I would get in the pool and do some walking. Some of your stretching can be done in the pool as well. Some squatting, some toe raises, and things like that. That would be probably the best and safest for you. It also helps with your balance, because the turbulence of the water challenges your balance as you're moving through the water, especially if there's other people in the pool with you. Creates just that those waves and things that knock you a little bit off balance. But because of the water's viscosity, everything is slowed down, kind of like a slow motion movie. So it gives you time to catch your balance so that you don't fall. So at the same time, it's a great way to work on your balance. So if you had to pick one thing to do with the Y, that would be my suggestion.
And good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Rosemary. Appreciate it. Karen emailed, she walks a couple of miles a day most days, but recently received her test results on her bone density. She was osteopenia in some areas, but osteoporosis starting in her left hip. She's 72, does wall push-ups for wrist strength. What can she do for her left hip?
So that's a great question. So she's walking, which is good for cardiovascular activity. I think Karen would probably benefit from seeing a physical therapist and getting a very well-designed, progressive, resistive strength training program for both of her hips. We do know that heavy resistance training that is very site-specific can also help with bone mineral density. So having Karen do some exercises that are very specific to the muscles around her hip and low back would be a great idea. So doing some nice heavy resisted glute bridges, some squats, things like that. So I think Karen needs to see a physical therapist and get a really well-designed strengthening program, which if loaded appropriately can also help with her bone mineral density. Lori?
Very good. Yeah, Let's go to Diane.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Let's go to Diane and pray to Sack next. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. I am calling to thank you for the program. I am a retired physical education teacher and was forced to learn how to weightlift because of our school getting equipment. And it was one of the most wonderful things that's ever happened in my life. Oh. I'm 72 years old. My bones are great. I weightlift 3 times a week. I haul mulch. I lift my grandchildren. Well, one I can't because he's larger than I am, but I'm a prime candidate for all of what you're talking about, and my bone density is off the charts. It is great. So I'm just encouraging all those people out there who say, oh, I can't do this because of my age. Don't let that deter you. You can do this, and it will pay off in spades. It is just terrific to be able to do things with your grandchildren that you might not have had the balance to do if you hadn't tried lifting or resistance training.
Diane, thank you so much for calling. Comment?
Oh, yeah. So this always reminds me, Jill probably knows what I'm going to say. Our mother at age 60, yep, was told by her doctor that she needed to start a weightlifting program because of her back pain. Never mind that she has two children and a son-in-law who are all physical therapists who have been telling her this for years, but you know how it is with family. So her physician told her she needed to start lifting weights. So being the good German woman that she was, she marched down to the local gym and set herself up on a weightlifting program. And she was sore at first, muscle soreness, but it took about 2 weeks. And then I'm telling you, that woman got religion. And I'll never forget the day she called me up and she said, this weightlifting is so great. You girls
ought to get, you ought to get
to do this.
Yeah. You all girls ought to give it a try. Should give weightlifting a try.
And she lifted weights until she got sick.
Right. Yeah. She probably until sick. 3 4 months before
week, she was down there.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, Diane, there you have it. Thank you so much for calling.
You,
appreciate
Diane.
It.
I love a chance to tell that story, so thank you.
I know.
Jim in St. Germain, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm 71, and I've had cluster headaches for the last 7 years, and periodic where they show up. And for the last 7-8 years, I've had this pain in my upper back neck region and deltoids, and soreness type pain. Doesn't feel like any bone related, but it's just muscle soreness. And I know it's related to these headache periods, but this never goes away. And I've been sort of doing stretching every morning religiously and touching the threshold of where it's, you know, too uncomfortable. And I'm just, the neurologist says he thinks it's just like blood flow and fluid flow up through there. But I'm not so sure. I'd just like to hear what you folks have got to say.
Okay.
So have you seen a physical therapist, Jim?
No, never a physical therapist on it.
Okay. So this is something that we see relatively frequently here in the spine clinic. We see people with cluster headaches. We see people with migraines. Some of them are what we would call cervicogenic headaches, and that they come from issues in your cervical spine. And because you're talking about pain in what we would classify as your upper quarter, upper back, shoulders, upper trapezius, all in that area, that's something that we treat on a regular basis. So I can't say exactly what the intervention would be, but I think seeing a physical therapist, and I'm thinking about needling. And so I'm going to toss it to Jill when I'm done. But a physical therapist will take a look at the whole, really stem to stern. I mean, focused on your upper quarter, but your upper quarter orients you, and then everything else below orients to that. And so we really look at everything to see what the genesis of this might be.
Right. And it's interesting to see if the cluster headaches would be associated with this muscle soreness. In other words, is Jim using these muscles to position himself, which is in essence causing his cluster headaches? So it's hard to determine which is coming first. A physical therapist with an evaluation would be able to do that. But one of the things the physical therapist may do is perform some dry needling on those muscles to kind of calm them down so they discontinue this tense muscle firing, and that may help alleviate Jim's cluster headaches. So seeing a physical therapist, like Lori said, is a great idea, and seeing how these two things are related, which came first, the chicken or the egg, and kind of get this under control, I think would be a really good idea.
Thank you very much for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. Gianni in Montello, let's go to you now. Thank you for calling.
Yes, great show today. Hey, listen, my father is 95 and really not particularly active. He really can't walk. Bisphosphonates, does he need to have a bone scan before he is prescribed that medication?
So that's an excellent question. It would be something his gerontologist or primary care physician would be able to address. Typically, we say yes, you want a baseline on individual's bone mineral density prior to giving them an intervention. But with your father's fragility and, you know, kind of ambulatory status, it might be challenging to do a BMD. There are other devices that you can use. You can look at the there's a device that looks at the thickness of your calcaneus, and it can extrapolate from that what your BMD is. I don't know how many clinics have that, but that would definitely be a conversation to have with the primary care physician or gerontologist. Lori?
Right. So are you thinking, why are you thinking the medication would be my first question.
Yes, the reason almost to prevent any further bone breakdown, so we don't have a broken bone. Okay. Should he fall or something like that? My mother was on it for a while, and are there any downsides to this? I was just kind of curious what I can do with him to prevent any broken bones, because that would be fatal for him.
Right.
You're absolutely right that you say that. We know there's a high association between falls and morbidity. So you're absolutely right with that. So one of the occasional side effects you see with bisphosphonates is osteonecrosis of the jaw. And you'll see it actually kind of wastes away bone in your jaw. Doesn't happen very often, but it's something that a primary care physician or gerontologist would certainly modify or monitor for with an individual who's on a bisphosphonate. And depending on which bisphosphonate you take, some of them require you to remain upright for a period of 10 or 15 minutes. And so that would also be something that your father would have to do. I can't remember if it's sitting or standing. Some of them, I believe, require you to remain standing for 10 minutes. So there are different ones out there. And so it would be important that they found one that would be appropriate for your father.
Right. And I guess the question I was coming at was, how do you know that he's osteoporotic? Right. When you say it's preventive, you're assuming that he's osteoporotic now. But if he's not had any scans, we don't really know.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
That would be Gianni, something for a physician to sort out.
Right.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison. Lori Tyne-Brody, a Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Our guest today, I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy on the show today, zeroed in a bit on osteoporosis and exercise with our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. You can call us, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Listener emailed after hearing us mention that walking doesn't do a ton for bone health, but I think we sort of clarified that a bit. I mean, it really does help. But wondered if walking on rugged hiking trails, does that create the novelty loading that is necessary or needed? Jill?
So that would be definitely better than just walking on the same flat surface with the same heel strike every time. So walking on a rugged terrain would increase and decrease your speed. It would change how you load those bones, how you're stepping. So it would definitely be better than walking on a plain flat surface. I don't know that there's any research that shows how much better it would be, but it would definitely be better. And again, like Lori mentioned earlier, if you're not walking and you start a walking program, that will be new and novel to your bones, and you will see an increase in your bone mineral density up to a certain point. It's when you do it continuously that we stop seeing the improvements. Walking still does many other really good benefits for you, cardiovascular health, mental health. We talked about clearing our heads in the morning, but it's just up to a certain point, walking is not going to be as beneficial for your bones.
And in terms of hiking, you know, it depends upon the hiking. You know, if you're walking up a steep incline and then you're doing, you know, sort of level, if you're climbing up rocks or like at Devil's Lake, you know, if you go up the Devil's Staircase and you're walking, 100 stairs or something up and down, all those things, anything that's novel, just remember that it has to be novel. And again, even if you're walking on a flat surface, as Jill mentioned, walking sideways, walking backwards, skipping. I love skipping if your balance is good. Just little hopping, either forward, backward, or, you know, you go for a certain distance and then you do some diagonal hopping for 10 yards. Just taking your normal walk and mixing it up instead of just straight on walking is going to up the ante here.
Tom in Nelson, Wisconsin. We'll go to you now. Hi, Tom.
Yes. Hello, folks. Plantar fasciitis. I'm sitting here icing my foot right now. Now, stretches, right. Cortisone, what type of rest should I use? What elevation? The other problem I have is I have a brachial ankle index of only 0.62 on that foot.
An ABI, okay. So,
let's start with the plantar fasciitis. How long have you had it?
Oh, it's been about a week now.
Okay, and you're clear that it's plantar fasciitis and not something else? You hurt back at your heel, first step in the morning, first step after sitting? Okay. Yep. Have you, and it's only on one foot?
Yes.
Okay, and do you know what caused it?
Dude. It wasn't, there was nothing, there was no strain that I noticed other than just getting out now in warm weather and playing golf, mowing lawn, et cetera, things like that.
Okay, so you're being more active. All right. Because we always wonder when you're doing what we consider a bilateral activity, walking, golfing, mowing the lawn, things like that, similar forces on both feet. So why are you having symptoms in one, not the other? So as a physical therapist, if you came in to see me, I would want to do a close examination of both of your lower extremities to see if there's a reason why one side is having symptoms, because that might be a risk factor that I need to deal with to prevent this from coming back. Okay, so that's one of the reasons why you would see a physical therapist and not just self-treat this. So in terms of treatment, stretching, if you go online and look specifically at a plantar fascia stretch, it's slightly different than a calf stretch. In a plantar fascia stretch, you have to pull your toes up or pull your toes back while you're stretching your calf. So that's a good thing. You know, the real key that Jill and I, if I'm not speaking out of turn, both love is a night splint. And sometimes it takes 2 months or more for that to actually work. But being diligent about wearing a night splint helps a lot. My favorite, and I have no vested interest in this, is a Darko because it goes on the front of your ankle and it helps. It also pulls your big toe up or back, which is what you really need to stretch your plantar fascia. I don't like the night splints that go behind your ankle because they're uncomfortable and you have to strap your foot down really hard to keep your foot back into that splint. I like the splint that goes on the top or the front of your ankle instead. So those would be the key things, along with figuring out how to dose your weight-bearing activity level to give this a bit of a rest.
Yeah. And when you see your physical therapist, bring in your shoes. So bring in the shoes, your shoes that you're walking in, perhaps your golf shoes, so they can look at those and see if you're weight bearing a little bit differently. That could be helpful. And they can also, if it's time for new shoes, make shoe recommendations for you. So I think all those things are good strategies. Icing is fine. It's probably not going to get to the root of the problem, but it will help with some symptom modification or pain modification.
Yeah, Tom, I'm just going to throw this in, and I don't know that this has anything to do with you, Tom, but in general, people who have been inactive over the past year because of the pandemic, so it represents a bigger change in activity level than you otherwise might have had from winter to spring, and people may have also gained weight over the winter because of less activity than they would normally have in the winter. So those are factors that could predispose people to problems this summer.
Tom, thanks again. Appreciate it. Annette in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Annette.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about, for bone density tests, the T-score and the Z-score. And I know more or less the difference. T-score is comparison to an average 30-year-old, whereas the Z-score is more for someone your age. And, you know, those numbers, what they mean, I was just hoping you could just talk about that in general a little bit, what we can deduce from. I had a bone density screening about a year and a half ago.
Okay. Annette, can I ask how old you are?
I am now 62. I had the test when I was 60.
Okay, great. So as a general rule, the only time we really utilize Z-scores are for children and adolescents looking at their bone mineral density. T-scores are typically used for adults. So as an adult, someone your age, you are looking at population age match norms. So looking at your T-score is better. With children, it's like hitting a moving target because as Lori and Larry and I all know, we all have daughters. Two 12-year-old girls could be entirely different. And so, or two 14-year-old girls, depending on where they are developmentally. So some girls have gone through all their Tanner stages or their stages of development. At age 14, some girls haven't. And so it becomes very challenging when you're looking at bone mineral density in adolescence, if you look at chronological age or if you look at maturational age. And so using a Z-score for adolescents is much more common. We don't use a T-score in that population. In your population, I would focus exclusively on the T-score. And again, those are norms for compared to Caucasian women.
All right. Thank you very much, Annette. Appreciate your call. Margo in Winneconne. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having this show. It's really great. I'm a 71-year-old retired massage therapist who hikes a lot and walks a lot. And I was diagnosed with osteoporosis, which was quite disturbing, in December. And my primary wanted to put me on bisphosphonates. And stubborn as I am, I said, no, thank you. My mother had been on them and it was not a good scene. And I said, how about some PT weight training? And she said, no, you walk enough, you weight bear enough. And I left the office and I thought, hey, I'm going to show you. And I went and I signed up for a weight training program. It's one-on-one and it's called Quick Hit. And it's 20 minutes, 20 minutes twice a week, very intense. And, you know, I feel like I've gotten much stronger. However, Medicare will only pay for a BMD every 2 years, and there's no way for me to tell, really, if what I'm doing is working or not. And so I also went to my friendly pharmacist, and he recommended a supplement. I take a handful of supplements in the morning and in the evening. and it's called Pro Bono. And so I've been doing that. And I'm wondering if you can tell me what you think about supplements, and also what the name of that article review was so that I can read it too. And then I had one more question. What was it? Let's see. The article, the supplement. Oh, and is there some other way to get a BMD that's not going to kill the budget before okay. Medicare will pay for another one?
All right. We've got three good questions there from Margo, and we will deal with those questions after we take a look at the news and we find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, Lori Tine-Brody, our guests today from the University of Wisconsin. Great to have them with us. And we will be back. They'll be with us right up till 12:30. We'll be back right after the news. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tine-Brody, Physical Therapist and an Athletic Trainer at UW-Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Questions about osteoporosis, for example, other aches and pains, give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And we had Margo on the phone from Winnicott, and she had three questions that related to osteoporosis. One had to do with the value of supplements. Another had to do with the BMD test and whether or not there was something else that she could do because of insurance purposes. And then the article, she wanted that title of that article so that she could read it herself. We may be able to put that up, a link to it on our Facebook page as well. But those are the three. Who wants to start? Lori, you going to start?
And I think we can put a link to the article citation up on the Facebook page. We can't post the article in its entirety because of copyright issues, but you should be able to find at least the abstract and then decide if you wish to purchase the article, or if you belong to a healthcare institution, chances are you can access that article through your institution's license. And then I'll deal with the supplements and then hand it over to Jill. So in terms of supplements, those are not FDA regulated. So we don't know a lot about supplements. They don't get researched well because there's really no money to be made from exclusivity in supplements. So the fact that you were provided that information by your pharmacist gives me some confidence in that recommendation. If it were recommended to me by my next door neighbor or some friends in my social circle, I might be a little more cautious about that. So most of the time we don't know how much the supplements help and how much is placebo. There's a very large placebo effect when talking about supplements. But the fact that you've been doing this program and you're feeling a lot better, you know, to me, you're 90% of the way there.
Yeah. Jill?
Regardless of your bone density measurements.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, regarding the Medicare, why does Medicare only pay for a bone mineral density test every 2 years? Unfortunately, bone is very, very, very slow to remodel. So unlike some other tests where you're going to see changes almost immediately, bone takes a long time to turn over. So the fact that they only want it done every 2 years kind of reflects upon the fact that it's going to take a while to see these improvements in your bone mineral density. And that can have a lot of people just want to give up on things, and don't give up on it. Certainly stick with it. But that's probably the rationale why Medicare only pays for it every 2 years. The other thing, I think one of the things Margo asked is, I'm doing this interval training program 2 times a week at her gym. And the question was, is that enough? And just looking at the article that we're posting the link to, for a moderate risk individual, which is kind of where I'd put Margo based on these definitions, their recommendation is to do a moderate to high impact activities, which would be 2 times your body weight, with a frequency of 4 to 7 days per week. And it's about 50 jumps a session. So 3 to 5 sets with 10 to 20 reps in it with a couple minutes in between. So it sounds to me like that's what she's doing on a 2-day-per-week basis. So if tolerable, I'd probably suggest that Margo add 1 or 2 more days of that higher impact activity into her routine and just slowly add them, perhaps add a 3rd day a week. And then if that's okay, go to 4 days per week.
All right. And for the article citation, go to WPR.org/Larry and to our program notes. And we may not have it posted quite yet, but we'll get it up there pretty quickly, I think. And today's date and WPR.org/Larry, and there you'll have it. Thank you again for that question. You know, I was talking about supplements. I wonder about nutrition. A listener emailed to say several years ago they took part in a research project at Florida State University's nutrition department. After eating dried plums for 1 year, they gained 3% density, bone density.
Dried plums?
Never heard of that.
For 1 year.
How many dried plums did they have to eat?
And you know, you know what dried plums are?
Grapes.
No, prunes.
Oh, prunes, that's right.
Prunes. So I love how they call them dried plums now rather than prunes, because
nobody wants
all
prunes.
Kinds of issues about that. But yeah, interesting. So dang, I'd have to go back and review the nutritional profile of a prune, but it may make its way back into fashion again.
And I'd be interested to see the quantity with which this person had to eat it, frequency, things like that. So maybe they are very calcium rich. It doesn't come to my radar as seeing it anywhere, but maybe it is. So that's certainly worth investigating.
And since it was at Florida State University at a pretty large institution, my guess is they controlled for variables fairly closely, activity level,
diets.
Other ways, other forms of bias in the research. So it'd be interesting to take a look at that study. So,
I guess we go online and take a look. Florida State University study on dried plums.
Nutritional profile of prunes.
Yeah.
Calorie forms. Yeah. It's 7 health benefits of plums and prunes. So copper, magnesium, carbs, potassium. I don't see calcium. I see phosphorus. 2% of the RDI, magnesium, manganese, potassium, and vitamin K, a lot of vitamin K. And I don't see vitamin D either. So
that's interesting, because
it'd be interesting to
look
at the study itself to see if they controlled and what they did for sure. Thanks for that email.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Nancy and Ellison Babe, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I'm 71 years old, and I've recently been diagnosed as having gone from pina to porosis, I think primarily in my hips. I think my doctor wants to put me on Prolia, and I wondered if your guest had some information as to what they thought of Prolia as opposed to the oral bisphosphonates.
I don't know enough about Prolia to make that recommendation. Is that the one, is it a couple times a year where you go in, or four times a year and you go in and it's an IV one? Is that right? Am I saying that right, Nancy?
It's not an infusion. It's two shots a year.
Oh, two shots a year.
Right,
okay.
Right. Okay.
Okay. That's a good question. I don't know, you know, as we talked about, bisphosphonates come in many different packages, and I don't know enough to make a comment about the two shots a year versus the monthly typical bisphosphonate that I would do. So that'd be a really good question for your physician. Surely two shots a year is probably more convenient than having to take an oral medication monthly, but that'd be a really good question for your physician. And then the other thing is, did your physician make any recommendations regarding progressive resistive strength training or some sort of physical activity to increase your BMD, meeting with a physical therapist, anything like that? Because that would be another approach I would use to managing this in conjunction with a bisphosphonate.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No.
Yeah,
no.
That would
okay.
be a really strong recommendation. So again, Jill said at the very top of the show that just the medication alone it's an important step, but it's not the only step. The exercise component of this has tremendous benefits, not only for your bone density, but for your health in general, for your cardiovascular health, for your neuromuscular health, for maintaining body weight, for preventing falls. All those things are really critical as we age. So the medication is just one piece of it. And if you are a novice to exercise, or if you're unsure how to start that exercise program, I would see a physical therapist and get some guidance on that. Absolutely.
All right. There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much. Sandra emailed. She's been playing a jump rope game on the Nintendo Switch for exercise a few times a day for 3 minutes or so. One morning she woke up and felt what she describes as a slight tearing at the knee. Over the past month, that pain has diminished. And she can do everything normal again, wondering if it's safe to restart the jumping game again. Is that likely what set up the pain in the first place?
Probably. You know, it's funny when we think about these games that we do in front of the television, sometimes we don't always think about shoe wear and making sure that we have appropriate shoe wear on. So it would be important for Sandra to just, you know, not do it in her socks. I would definitely put myself in well-supportive shoes. And then, of course, the million-dollar question that we all get at is probably the Nintendo skills that she's doing would, you know, load each leg evenly. So then why did Sandra get this in one and not the other? So I love the fact that she's doing this interval type of training, this jump roping. It probably wouldn't be a bad idea to see a physical therapist just to make sure that we prevent this from happening again, probably a 1 or 2 time visit to see if there's something else we could add to Sandra's home routine to make sure that it's a little bit more complete. Sounds like she's got the impact going well, but perhaps could need some strength training. Lori, what do you think?
Yeah, it's like you said at the beginning of the show where you talked about initiating this program to improve bone density. But you need to make sure first that you have sufficient strength and balance to do that. So with my patients, I call that the infrastructure. You need the infrastructure to then build that skill or that specific activity upon. And Sandra may need some little bit of infrastructure work, either some strengthening in some muscle groups or some flexibility in some muscle groups to make sure she has the right infrastructure in place to tolerate the Nintendo activity. So again, as Jill said, a visit or two to the physical therapist can help with that.
Thank you for that. Cindy in Stevens Point, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have
I'm sorry, you're breaking up, Cindy. I think we got a problem there. Cindy has osteopenia and has kidney stones. She's concerned about medication for one impacting the other thing.
Oh, she's concerned about taking a bisphosphonate if she has a history of kidney stones. I wonder if that's what she's referring to. So with osteopenia, she may be better off with making sure that she incorporates the exercise component of this, excuse me, including the strength training and some impact training to see if she can increase her bone mineral density without negatively impacting her kidney stones. And I don't know if bisphosphonates have a correlation or can impact kidney stones at all. Do you know, Lori?
No, but it seems to me that that is a reasonable consideration.
Right,
and one that
for
should
sure.
be discussed with your pharmacist and or physician. So
exactly.
yeah, before
right.
you start any medication, if you have kidney issues, that's, you always have to weigh the pros and cons of that. So that's a conversation for somebody who's overseeing your medical and medication management.
Scott in New Glarus, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Yes, hello. I'm dealing now recently with lumbar spinal stenosis, and I'm wondering what are some of the best approaches, non-surgical, and who might I most want to speak to about, you know, expertise in that area?
Lori.
So yes, I'm at, you know, a spine physical therapy clinic here in Madison, and this is something we see every day. So if you have not been referred to physical therapy or seen a physical therapist, I would see a physical therapist for this. There are a number of different interventions that we use, and they are specific to the individual. So as I've said before, there's no one size fits most for things like spinal stenosis. So we look at and examine that patient, see what their limitations are, see if, you know, they lack strength, if they lack mobility, if they lack balance, and we design an intervention program based upon that. For some people, they have, this is just an example, they have so much arthritis in their low back that they will never regain any significant motion in their low back. So in that case, we focus very much on their hips and on their upper back, because we have to find some place to steal that motion from that's not available in your low back. We work very hard on strengthening in the lower extremities and looking at how you move and use your lower extremities, because if they're weak or inefficient, what they do is they shift the load from what they're supposed to be doing and they throw it onto the low back. Then that's sometimes why people end up with terrible back pain, because things in your hips and lower legs are not doing what they're supposed to do. So then that's where our focus goes. So it really varies from one to the next, but I would absolutely start with seeing a physical therapist, particularly someone that specializes in spine and has that expertise, and they can get you going, feeling better and moving better.
Terry in Madison emailed, wondering about running and walking shoes. They're adding more cushion, especially to the heel, and is wondering, will this added cushion decrease the amount of good bone stress needed to increase bone density and decrease osteoporosis?
That's a great question, and the answer would be no, because you're still loading, you know, 5 times your body weight with running, which is more than adequate. And so, but she's right. I mean, a lot of shoes are getting more cushion, more support. So they may have more support in the heel. Not everybody is a heel strike. Some people are 4-foot strikers. Some people are midfoot strikers. So the take home message, the long and short of it, is no. I wouldn't be concerned about that.
Brenda in Onalaska, what's on your mind? Brenda, are you there? Oh, maybe we lost Brenda. Kathy in Watertown?
Yes, yes.
Hi, go ahead.
I wonder if someone could talk about something called the bioavailability of calcium. I know that you can only absorb like 500 milligrams at a time, but that seems to be something a little different. The percentage of the bioavailability of calcium is different for different foods like milk or whatever. And I had no idea of that. Like you drink a cup of milk and you're supposed to get 310 milligrams of calcium and it provides 25% of your daily value, but that's not really true. You're really only getting a third of it. So I wonder if somebody could talk about that.
So, yeah.
Go ahead, Lori. No, go ahead.
Yeah, different foods have different bioavailability. So that's how much your body can absorb at once. So as Jill stated earlier, in terms of drinking milk, that you don't want to drink all your milk at once because your body can only absorb and utilize a certain amount at one time. So that's why understanding that concept and you know, if you have a lot of questions about that, seeing a registered dietitian or nutritionist who can help you with that would make sense. But this is why we spread our various nutritional intake across the course of the day. And we also watch what we eat together. So for example, vitamin C interferes with absorption of calcium. So you don't want to eat an orange and drink a glass of milk, which doesn't.
Sounds terrible anyway.
But you know what I mean. You don't want to have those foods together. So it is, as most things in life, often more complicated than we discuss. We sort of give you the generalities. But yes, you know, it's not unlike on a hot day, when we tell you to drink lots of water, your body cannot process the liquid at the same rate that you lose it if you're being active on a really hot day. So your body can only process so much of these minerals and food and liquids at once. So watching what things you pair together and the spacing of things throughout the day is important. So that's a really important point that you brought up, Brenda.
So if I have my cereal in the morning with milk and also a glass of orange juice?
Yeah, probably not. I probably wouldn't do the orange juice with the milk.
Right. And the other thing you need to think about. The other thing you need to think about.
Go ahead, Jill. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. The other thing, what Kathy was talking about is with the bioavailability is vitamin D. So calcium and vitamin D go together. And one of the things that vitamin D does is it kind of helps our body absorb that calcium. So many of the foods that you eat, whether you know it or not, Larry, are vitamin D fortified. So milk is fortified with vitamin D many times. Your cereals are fortified with vitamin D because that helps with the absorption of calcium. And so you want to stay away from vitamin C, but you want a lot of vitamin D. So it gets very tricky, as Lori alluded to. And if this is something that, you know, you're really concerned about your calcium absorption and getting enough calcium, seeing a nutritionist is a really good idea.
And on that tricky note, we are out of time. I want to thank you both very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to your next visit on July 19th, I believe. Thanks a lot, Lori and Jill. Appreciate it very
much.
Thank you. Thank everybody for
questions. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne Brody, both with the University of Wisconsin. Jill's in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. She's an associate professor, I should say. And Lori, of course, a physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Tomorrow at 11, Dr. Bill Stork stops by to answer your questions about your pet's health. 4th of July fireworks coming up. We'll talk about helping pets with noise phobias. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.